passes, Senate Bill 5507. How are we doing, Lori?
Oh, we're doing fine. Good morning, Chair Cora, members of the subcommittee. This legislative session, Ways and Means has been expanding its use of joint analyst coverage on larger agency budgets. So for this budget, myself, Lori Byerly, and Robin Lamont will be handling the budget and working with you through the next 3 weeks of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. Robin Lamont is responsible for the overall agency budget and will handle division budgets for workers' compensation-related areas, central services, and building codes. And I will handle the insurance-related budgets, the Office of Women, Minority, and Emerging Small Businesses, and the Appraiser Certification and Licensure Board. You should see in front of you a packet with a clip like this. On top of that is a schedule that shows the day-by-day schedule we have in mind, as well as an agenda for today. Because of the shared responsibility, we are recommending that we do work sessions as we go along with the different divisions within the department. If you review this attached work plan that shows a daily schedule, you will see that we expect to go on a work session for workers' compensation on Tuesday, April 17th, and that would be the first work session we would get to on this budget. And that will follow all of the division presentations for that program area. We are also recommending that public testimony be scheduled at the beginning of each division presentation, which you will also see on the work plan. And if you'll turn to that memo I mentioned previously, you'll see some items listed here. First, you'll see that there's several attachments. There's a graphic display of the agency budget. There is a worksheet that shows the governor's recommended budget figures. There are some references to budget notes from the previous biennium. The current biennium, the department had 3 budget notes. One directed the department to conduct research into the issue of major contributing cause and workers' compensation. The department will submit copies of that report when we get to the workers' compensation division. 2 other issues were related to the Oregon Occupational Safety and Health Administration division around farm labor camp issues. The department reported on those issues to the November 2000 Emergency Board. And if you want additional information on that, we can provide that to you as well. It is not attached in that packet. The department also had a change of director audit this biennium and a fiscal audit. There are copies of those in the packet as well, but there were no significant findings or issues that arose out of those 2 audits. You will also be asked to consider a department fee bill, which is attached to this packet. We plan on a public hearing and work session on the fee bill on April 17th. There are fees in that bill primarily for building codes and the insurance division. The department has made several presentations. If you'll look in your packet, they're listed, the Emergency Board and the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology during the biennium. They were primarily reports in response to budget notes or legislative direction. If you want additional information on those activities, we can provide that to you as well. Any questions so far?
Questions?
Okay. If you'll dig a little bit deeper in that packet, on page 3, you'll see some PowerPoint slides, and we're going to give you a brief overview of the department before we let the agency chime in. The department has several program areas. These include the regulation and enforcement of workplace safety and health, which includes workers' compensation. Financial insurance regulation is another responsibility of the department, as well as regulation of building codes and other consumer services. The department has a structure with a central support division, which provides support to all of those program areas and divisions within the department. On the next page, you will see how the department's expenditures have grown over the last several biennia. You'll see that a big portion of the department's expenditures are in non-limited funds related to primarily to the workers' compensation program. The slide below shows how the department's revenue is derived. You'll see that a big portion of that comes from the workers' compensation program and the cents per hour assessment. There are a little bit of federal funds in the department, some money from fines, charges, and other fees, and a portion that comes from business licenses and fees, as well as insurance premiums and insurance taxes. Kind of shows you where the dollars come from. On the next page, you'll see how, once again, those expenditures for the program or for the department or for the workers' compensation payments and other non-limited expenditures, 63% of the department's expenditures are in that area. And the slide below on page 5 also shows once again that the bulk of the non-limited expenditures are related to workers' compensation payments There are a few expenditures related to the Oregon Medical Insurance Program, a pool program claim, 29% of those non-limited expenditures. On the very last page, in brief, some of the issues that the Department of Consumer Business Services will be dealing with in the 2001-03 biennium include more changes to the workers' compensation system, including workload and policy issues, as well as some revenue issues. Workload and staffing, including converting limited duration building codes, full-time equivalent positions to permanent positions. And there's a proposal to move the appraiser certification and licensure board from the department and out to a semi-independent agency status. And we'll also be looking at the bill that moves that board out during the course of our department overview and work session process. So once again, there's additional attachments for your review. And if you have any questions at this point, I'd like to answer those.
Any questions? Well, I'm fine, Lori. We'll go ahead with the department's overview. Mary and Debbie Lincoln, Deputy Director.
Morning. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Mary Neidig, the Director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services, or often referred to as DCBS. We'll be sharing our morning's review for the next 3 weeks, and we're looking forward to the opportunity to share with you what we do and at the Department of Consumer and Business Services and give you an idea of the benefits of the programs that we provide. Let me start by just offering a very incomplete sampling of what we do at our department. We regulate amusement rides and investigate industrial accidents. We issue building permits and regulate HMOs. We license pawnbrokers and real estate appraisers. We inspect pressure vessels and examine insurance company financial records. You could call us if you want to make sure that your investment advisor isn't a complaint magnet, or you can see if your employer has workers' compensation insurance. So just in a nutshell, we provide a very broad array of regulatory services for Oregonians. I came to the department about 10 years ago, in fact 10 years ago this week, as a member of the Workers' Compensation Board. I served 5 years there, mostly as board chair, and then another 4 years as administrator of the Workers' Compensation Division. Those are two of our program areas within DCBS. I was appointed as director about a year ago. So this is my first opportunity to present a budget to the legislature. I have three goals this morning. One is to give you a broad overview of the Department of Consumer and Business Services, what we do and why we're here. Secondly, I want to tie our work to the Oregon benchmarks to give you a sense of what it is that we contribute to Oregon. And third, to set the stage for the remainder of the 3 weeks. We'll be introducing each of our program administrators. In fact, they're mostly filling the back of the room right now. And I want to just, for the record, let you know this is the only time in the legislative session you'll see this many folks from our department in this building at one time. But we wanted to make sure you had an opportunity to see the group from the very beginning. Each day when we come back with individual programs, you'll just see the program administrators on those days. I'd like to draw your attention to the notebook. I know you all have a copy of it sitting in front of you. I'm going to start under tab 1, page 1. It has an organization chart that looks like the one up here on the easel. As you can see from the chart, I'm the director, and Debbie Lincoln sitting next to me is our deputy director. Together, we're responsible for the major program areas you see in all those boxes. I'll touch on each of the programs and introduce the appropriate administrator for you. and they in turn will present the detail of their programs a day at a time during the next 3 weeks. I want to start first with the Workers' Compensation Division. I'll go in the order that you'll hear these divisions. The Workers' Compensation Division is a regulatory branch of the workers' comp system. In the room with us today is John Schiltz. John, you want to stand up? John is our division administrator. He'll be presenting his budget to you on Thursday. The Workers' Comp Division manages the Worker Benefit Fund, one of those large expenditures that Lori mentioned earlier. They conduct various kinds of audits. They do administrative case review of medical and vocational kinds of disputes, and they handle various benefit programs for injured workers. The Oregon Occupational Safety and Health Division, or better known as OR-OSHA, manages workplace safety and health through the administration of the Oregon Safe Employment Act. Peter DeLuca, our administrator, is with us today, and he'll be with you on day 4 of our presentations. Also on day 4, you'll hear from the Workers' Compensation Board, which is the adjudicatory branch of the system. This is where people go when they have a dispute. The board does first-level hearings and appeals of those hearings, and the board orders are appealable on to the Court of Appeals. Maureen Bach is the chair of the board, and she will be presenting her budget to you. On day 6, Joel Ariel, administrator of the Insurance Division, will present their budget. The Insurance Division administers the insurance code and provides protections for the insurance buying public in Oregon through various means such as licensing, monitoring of insurer solvency, resolving consumer complaints, and approving products and rates in Oregon. On day 7, Greg Mulcasian will present the budget for the Division of Finance and Corporate Securities. This group regulates financial activities for Oregon. The division regulates banks, credit unions, securities transactions, and a dozen or so smaller programs, including payday loans and sellers of travel. After that, you will hear from the Building Codes Division from Administrator Joe Brewer. I'm assuming these folks are all standing up back there. Okay, thank you. The division's responsible for managing the statewide building code and is charged with making sure buildings are constructed safely in Oregon while promoting a positive business climate. Rocky King will be with you on day 10. Rocky manages a component of the Oregon Health Plan known as the Oregon Medical Insurance Pool, or in simpler terms, this is the high-risk pool. This is where Oregonians go when they can't buy insurance in the commercial marketplace. Also on day 10, Jim Kruger will present a budget for the Appraiser Certification and Licensure Board. This board and a small staff certifies real estate appraisers in Oregon and investigates and takes action on complaints against appraisers. Finally, on day 11, you'll hear from our Central Support Services Group. As Lori indicated, we centralize a number of services. Our department's large enough that we gain significant efficiencies from doing that. We have programs within Central Support. Dan Adelman will talk with you about our Information Management Division, where we manage a lot of data and produce a number of reports. Joan Balankowski will talk about our Business Administration Division. That group does our business practices kinds of things like accounts receivable, accounts payable, payroll, those kinds of services. Cheryl Warren will talk to you about our Office of Personnel Administration, where we do human resource, health and safety, all the things that keep an organization running. And Sherry Thibault-Harrell will present the budget for the Office of Minority, Women, and Emerging Small Business. Together, those budgets provide centralized services for the entire department. We should wrap things up for you on April 30th. That's our hope, and that's what our schedule indicates. Now, it seems like if you just look at the titles and the programs for all of those divisions, we are a somewhat disconnected group of divisions. But there is some underlying connection. I want to draw your attention to page 5 of the first tab. A little bit down the page, you'll see a mission statement. our overriding mission at our department is to protect and serve Oregon consumers and workers while promoting a positive business climate in the state. That's the thread that connects all the programs that we manage in DCBS. Our mission ties us together, and it creates a framework for us to operate. On page 6 of the notebook, you'll see some key initiatives in our strategic business plan. I won't read that material, but I will give you a quick example in each of those areas. Our strategic initiatives are what gives us long-term guidance on how we make decisions at our department. Under customer service, for instance, we have worked in a number of interim activities with bringing stakeholders together so that we could help them resolve issues in things, areas that we regulate. For instance, in lieu of a proposed ballot measure last fall, we brought a number of folks together, insurers, consumers, and purchasers, to deal with issues around patient protections in Oregon. And that group met several times during the interim. They created a consensus bill, which will come to you, come to the legislature. And that bill avoided an inconsistent process through the ballot measure system and all of the competing interests that you often have to deal with in the legislature. So that's an example of how we provided some customer service in areas to ultimately provide better service for Oregonians. Under regulatory reform, we had an initiative a few months ago on reducing paperwork in the medical part of the workers' compensation system. We were able to bring physicians together in a pretty good sized panel to tell us what the problems were, where the redundancies were in overuse of paperwork in the workers' comp system. We were able to take that and through administrative rules and some policy practices in the workers' comp division, create a more workable system for physicians in Oregon. Under public information, our building codes division holds regular stakeholder meetings around the state. They travel all the way from Pendleton to Brookings and a number of places in between. It's a chance for local building officials and contractors and so forth to come together to ask questions about the code interpretations, about laws and rules, the kinds of information that makes us all more effective in the state managing the building code. Under workforce development, like all other agencies in state government, we're concerned about the future of our leadership in this department. The department's average age of our employees is 45. That's not unusual, but it's kind of a staggering number if you think about what that means in terms of developing our managers and our leadership in the future. So in the next 5 years, we expect major turnover in a number of key positions. So we've been working pretty hard within our department to deal with succession planning. We've developed career tracks that future leadership can focus on, particularly in budget and policy, some of the areas that managers don't get a lot of experience in the day-to-day world. So we've got a number of efforts going under the workforce development initiative. And finally, technology. This is probably an area where we have more initiative and more activities than any of the others. Our clientele probably has a higher rate of access to internet services than many of the clients of state agencies. We deal with businesses, we deal with insurance companies, and those folks are interested in technology. And we've been working pretty closely with a number of the people we regulate to upgrade our systems so that we can interface with those businesses on the internet and on the web and so forth, rather than by paper. We are one of four or five agencies working with the Department of Administrative Services to develop e-commerce opportunities. We're looking at and developing interactive licensing and certification. We're looking at and piloting a way to take cash or to take payments in for services that we provide. So we have a number of programs in this area. We're also looking at and have now developed an agent licensing and rate and forms project, which we're working at the national level to coordinate with other states. So it has benefits even outside of our state. You're going to hear these five themes over and over again in the next 3 weeks. That's because our strategic initiatives, again, form the guidelines for how we make budget and policy decisions. On page 8 of your notebook, we provided a very brief outline of how the Department of Consumer and Business Services has evolved over time. We actually were first formed through legislation in 1987. Some of you probably remember when we had the old Department of Commerce and a different structure in Oregon for regulating. The Department of Insurance and Finance came out of the 87 legislative session. Many refer to that as DIF, and in fact, many still refer to us as DIF these days. But the Department of Insurance and Finance brought together workers' compensation programs, banking, and insurance. So that was the beginning of our division today, our department. In 1990, a very large workers' compensation reform bill passed, which added a number of programs to our workers' comp division. In 93, our name was changed to our current name, Department of Consumer and Business Services, and other programs were added, building codes, the Oregon Medical Insurance Pool, the Appraisers Board, and the Office of Minority Women and Emerging Small Business. In 95, the Office of Energy was added to DCBS. We also began having responsibility for the Worker Benefit Fund. The only deletion over time has been in 1990 when the Office of Energy was actually moved out of the Department of Consumer and Business Services and became an independent department again. We also, last session, had a handful of administrative law judges transferred out to the newly formed Central Hearings Panel. And finally, in 1999, the Tri-County Building Industry Service Board was added. That's an office that's managed within our Building Codes Division. You'll hear more about that later on. All in all, we are the primary regulator in state government, and that's how we became that way. I want to look next at page 10 to give you a sense for how our programs, how we measure the effectiveness of our programs and how they relate to the Oregon benchmarks. We have several outcomes that we and a number of others track. The Oregon premium rate ranking for workers' compensation insurance is a measure that we use that directly impacts benchmark number 9, the national ranking of the cost of doing business in Oregon. Many of you may remember in the 80s, workers' compensation was one of the most expensive costs of operating a business in Oregon. We can say today that that's no longer the case. Incident rates for workplace injuries and illnesses directly affects the cost of doing business, and you'll hear more about all of these outcomes later. Also, the rate of hearings in Oregon has an impact on the cost of doing business. Oregonians' ability to obtain health insurance through the Oregon Medical Insurance Pool affects benchmark number 54, having to do with Oregonians without health insurance. So that gives you a sense of some of the major contributions our programs make. On page 11, a little more detail, benchmark number 9, Oregon's rank in workers' compensation premium rates has improved from the 6th highest cost in the nation to the 34th highest cost. In other words, we've gone from sort of the top, almost the top of the list to much, much closer to the bottom of the list. Oregon is currently ranked lowest in business taxes of the 7 western states. Also, between 1992 and 1998, the percentage of Oregonians without health insurance dropped from 16% to 11%. our enrollment in the Oregon Medical Insurance Pool increased 38% during that period of time. We believe we can show a direct correlation between that program and the ability of Oregonians, uninsured Oregonians, to get insurance in Oregon. With that, I'll stop and answer any particular questions you have.
Any questions?
Madam Chair.
Representative Hayden.
I was just thinking about creating businesses. Do you just support existing businesses, or do you do anything proactive to encourage new businesses in Oregon?
Madam Chair and Representative Hayden, we don't perform the kind of function that, for instance, economic development might perform. We do provide some assistance programs to businesses, to business people who want to start businesses. Probably our biggest contribution is through our small business ombudsman, and his role is to help new businesses retain, understand what their obligations are, and retain workers' compensation insurance. He competes, coordinates a small business fair where we provide information along with the employment department and economic development. We try to bring sort of all of those resources together that a new business, particularly a new small business in Oregon, would need to know about, and provide those in a one-day fair. We had last September, our last small business fair drew, I believe, about 300 to 350 people, most of them trying to get started in a new business. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mary. Very good. For your first time, you pass.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Debbie Lincoln. I'm the Deputy Director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and I'll be with you through the next 3 weeks as kind of the point person for the budget. So I'll be happy to answer any questions you have over the next few weeks or find the information. I'll be your key contact. Just very briefly, following Mary's presentation in this book, pages 14 and 15 list the substantive legislation that the department proposed during this session, and most of those are moving through fairly easily. There's only a couple that I'd like to draw your attention to as having budget implications. One is on the bottom of page 14, Senate Bill 304. This is the substantive bill that you'll be hearing, which moves the appraisers board into semi-independent agency status, and it's a bill that we have worked with the stakeholders to develop and are supportive of. And that and the impact on that budget, on our budget, obviously, would be to pull the appraisers board budget out of the DCBS budget. The other bill that I'd point out as having an impact, some impact on budget, is Senate Bill 305, which is merging or coordinating the 13 different program revenues in the Division of Finance and Corporate Securities. And that, again, is moving through fairly well. As you'll see, each of our programs is supported by dedicated funds, and we are constantly looking for ways to make the administration of those very many funds more efficient, and to provide programs with some security against insolvency, and that's the reason for that bill. The rest of the bills are substantive. I'd be glad to answer any questions about any of them, but if there are no questions, I'll go on.
Questions on the bills that are moving through the process? Okay, Debbie, go ahead.
The following page is our affirmative action plan, page 16. I'll just point out very quickly that we are improving, and we're very, very conscious of having our workforce reflect the diversity that appears in Oregon population. We have been able to increase our representation of people of color by 20%, and people with disabilities by 5%, while our employee count itself goes up less, just about 1%. And we do have a program option package in the central services portion of the budget that asks for the creation of a position to help us reach people whose language is not, whose first language is not English, and whose cultural barriers may prevent them from accessing our services, and we'll talk about that when we get to the central support services. So we are very conscious of addressing those issues. The next tab, the budget overview, what I'd like to do is give you kind of the 10,000-foot view of what the DCBS budget looks like. I would like to ask that as you go through this budget, you use this executive summary notebook rather than the budget book, because we're bringing you a revised governor's recommended budget, and the numbers in this book are the revised numbers. The numbers in the budget book itself have not been changed. If you need a crosswalk for any particular issue, we'll be glad to do that for you. So that if you get into the budget book and the numbers are confusing, we'll crosswalk those for you. But the numbers that we have in this book are the accurate numbers, and we'll be telling you why we've had to make those changes. So to start out, and we've got charts over here of the charts that are in your book, just to kind of be sure we're all on the same page. On page 17, you see the overall expenditure summary. The third column is the revised governor's recommended budget. We're asking for $165.5 million in base budget plus essential packages, a 1.1% increase over the legislatively approved budget from last biennium. We are asking for just under $3 million in program option packages in various divisions. We are also bringing to you some reduction options because of revenue shortfalls in some areas, but because our different divisions are funded by different revenue sources and have varying needs, we're still asking for some option packages in those budgets that continue to be healthy. Our total operating budget then of $168 million is less than 3% increase over the 9901 legislatively approved budget. I will mention that this revised budget does not reflect the impact of pulling the appraisers board out. So once that bill passes, if it does, this budget would be lower by the amount of the appraisers budget. The reductions that between the original governor's recommended and the revised governor's recommended are due mainly to revised revenue forecasts in the premium assessment operating account. That's the operating account that supports the workers' compensation programs. And those reductions will affect the workers' compensation division, Oregonosia, central support services, and to a very small extent, the insurance division. We also are looking at revenue impacts in the building codes division, particularly the manufactured housing industry, which is in a downturn right now. All of our divisions are very responsive to the economy, and often because the ups and downs of the economy don't necessarily match our biennial budgeting process, we continue to, on an ongoing basis, forecast and make adjustments as we go, and we'll continue to do that. Right now, obviously, as the economy begins to slow down, we begin to see that slow down in housing industry, construction industry. We see it in less employment, which means less payroll, which means less workers' comp premium, which all dominoes into revenue impacts on our budgets. Rest of our budget, the non-limited portion, as you can see, is a kind of a special payments or transfer payment budget. These monies are largely in payments to injured workers from the Workers' Benefit Fund and payments to insureds in the Oregon Medical Insurance Pool. And that budget is $305 million, bringing our total budget to just under $500 million. We are asking for less FTE of full-time equivalents and positions than we had in that 9901 budget. We're dropping about 28 full-time equivalents and 37 positions in our request, again, due to these revenue reductions. The next page breaks out that operating budget by division, give you an idea of what the division's relative size is the two largest divisions, Workers' Comp Division and Oregon OSHA, again, are both funded by the Workers' Compensation Premium Assessment. We go from divisions at 240 full-time equivalents all the way down to five, a couple of programs of five full-time equivalents. So we have a widely varying size and impact of programs. Let's see. The central support services, the orange segment at the bottom of the pie, is 187, almost 187 full-time equivalents. I want to emphasize this includes three major pieces. It includes the director's office, which is personnel, communications and graphics and publications. It includes the two workers' compensation ombudsman offices, as well as Mary and my office. But it also includes our information management division, and our business administration division, two centralized services that serve the entire department in a centralized fashion. Any questions on those?
So the three division, Madam Chair, as I understand, central support services are the director's office, the workers' compensation ombudsman, and business administration.
Madam Chair and Representative Butler, no, the three divisions are the Business Administration Division, the Information Management Division, and the Director's Office. The Ombudsman's office offices are part of the Director's Office. The next page, page 19, shows the pieces that go into that $305 million non-limited budget, the transfer payments, again, that we make to all sorts of claimants. The items that are asterisked are part of the workers' benefit fund, and we'll go into a little more detail on these tomorrow when we go over the workers' compensation system. They include such programs as return to work programs and the reemployment assistance piece, non-complying employer claims. That's what NCE means. I think we need a quarter. Those are claims paid for folks who are working for an employer who should have workers' comp insurance but does not and are injured. And so we pick up those claims and then go after the employer for reimbursement. Reopened claims, this is a payment to folks whose injuries are more than 5 years old, become aggravated, and the Workers' Compensation Board on its own motion can reopen that case and decide to change or modify those claims. The retroactive fund, the largest one, these are increased benefits for claimants who were injured when benefits were lower, so sort of a cost of living upgrade for claims with long tails. Handicapped workers and rehabilitation program are all, again, tails to claims that are no longer being accepted. Rehab program was ended in 1986 and handicapped workers in 1990, so we're finishing up those programs. Then we get out of the workers' benefit fund and into the Oregon Medical Insurance Pool claims, again, payments to it, people who are insured through the medical insurance pool for their claims, supported both by premiums that those people pay and an assessment on insurers. And all other, the 5.8, includes a $3.2 million payment to a program called the Center for Research in Occupational and Environmental Technology. Thank you. Toxicology. Thank you. At the Oregon Health Sciences University. And this is a program that looks at workplace injuries and does research on that.
Excuse me, Debbie.
Yes,
Representative Butler.
Thank you. Debbie, that Oregon Health Sciences program is in the All Other Unlimited, is that right?
That's right.
And what's the cost of that program?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, that's $3.2 million. There's another $3.2 million for that program in the operating budget, so it's a $7.4 million program overall, but $3.2 million is in that all other. Then the rest of that includes coverage for self-insured employers and employer groups that are that go insolvent. So if you have a self-insured employer, who is the big department, Montgomery Ward is an example, goes insolvent, their claims, they can no longer pay their claims, and so we cover those claims. That's $752,000 in there.
That's all in, again, the other non-limited.
The other non-limited, that's
outside
right.
Outside of the $3.2 million to the
yeah, house expenses. Yes, that's correct. And there are some collections costs, the costs that we pay to collect debts given owed to us, and then a very small piece, about $77,000, that the appraisers board collects and passes through to the Fed. So that makes up the rest of that $5.8 million.
Chair, will we see each of these pieces in single spots, or are we going to see them spread out throughout the budget on the non-limited?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, the Workers' Benefit Fund you'll see all together. The OMIP claims we'll talk about when Rocky King does the medical insurance pool budget. And the other pieces do tend to get spread out. The CROAT, the Center for Research Funds, are part of the workers' compensation discussion. And the other smaller pieces are part of the individual budgets. For example, the appraiser's piece will be mentioned in its budget. So those pieces do get spread out. The following page 20, the chart is budget by category. Again, the special payments piece, which is most of the non-limited budget, is the biggest piece of our budget. Personal services and the operating fund takes up the bulk of that, of the operating money. Total operating money is 36.8% of our overall nearly $500 million budget. I will point out that our capital outlay costs are very, very small, $500,000, $500,000 for the biennium. Revenue sources on page 21. Again, I want to emphasize that all funds that we collect are dedicated to the program for which they are collected. So insurance assessments can't be used to pay for building codes, or the securities funds that we collect in the Division of Finance and Corporate Securities can't be used to cover an OSHA cost. We cannot mix and match. We've got to keep these separate. I also want to point out that we use no general fund in this budget. It's a completely non-general fund, other funded budget. So having said that, we do collect money for the general fund, and that's shown up in the right-hand corner of the pie. The insurance taxes at $84.4 million come in. Our taxes on insurance companies that come to us, and we transfer directly to the general fund. We also transfer to the general fund excess securities fees, fees that we charge to securities, the securities industry. We keep what we need to run the program and send the rest to the general fund. We also transfer some fines to the general fund. Insurance and the Division of Finance and Corporate Security transfers their fines to the general fund. The appraisers board transfers its fines to the general board, general fund, and the boiler program in the building codes division transfers its fines to the general fund. The largest pots of revenue that we collect are the workers' compensation cents per hour, which supports the workers' benefit fund. And again, tomorrow when we go over the workers' comp system, I'll go into detail on what these funds are and how they're collected and what they're used for. And the workers' comp insurance tax, which is the premium assessment that supports the operating costs of the workers' comp programs. We do have a very small pot of federal funds. We spend them as other funds, so you won't see a line item for federal funds in this budget. Most of that is used in Oregon OSHA. It comes from the Oregon, the federal OSHA program. And we've got a little bit in insurance and in the Information Management Division for research on OSHA-related objects or subjects. We also collect, through the insurance division, fire marshal fees, which we transfer directly to the fire marshal. at 9.7 million for the coming biennium, and I think that was something of an issue for the legislature earlier this session. So I will point out that we are involved in that. So the next page, we start talking a little bit about budget issues. We have four major issues that we'll be discussing as we go through each division's budget. And the first one we have mentioned, the workers' compensation revenue shortfall. The revenue source that funds the workers' compensation programs run by the state is projected to be less than the amount necessary to support current services level. We'll talk tomorrow in detail about what that assessment is, where it comes from, how it's forecasted, what it covers, what it pays for, and how we propose to fill the hole that we're seeing in the coming two biennia. I will say today that we could raise that assessment that supports that fairly substantially, and the director does have the authority to set the assessment to cover the entire shortfall. We chose not to do that, and working with the stakeholders, particularly with the Workers' Compensation Management Labor Advisory Committee, which is our main advisory group on workers' comp programs, we've come up with a three-pronged approach to filling that shortfall. One is to increase the assessment a small amount, what we had originally projected to do when the governor's budget was first put together. Second is to make a transfer of revenues from the workers' benefit fund to the operating fund to cover the administrative costs of the workers' benefit fund. So that will take the pressure off the operating fund. And third is to make some program cuts in the workers' comp division and in Oregon OSHA and a little bit in the central support services that support those programs. So again, we'll be walking through those options tomorrow in more detail as we do the workers' comp system.
Okay.
Representative Hayden.
I'd be pleased to hear more detail on that, but some little red flag triggers in the back of my mind when I see transferring revenues from the workers' benefit fund to cover administrative costs. I just want to flag that.
We'll talk, Madam Chair, Representative Hayden will talk in quite a bit of detail and give you some opportunity to see what it is we're proposing specifically. The second issue, again, I mentioned earlier, is the building code's revenue shortfall. We're looking at reductions in revenues because of the slowdown in the economy, particularly in manufactured housing, but also in structural, mechanical, and other business licenses and fees. And any time we have a shortfall in any of those, our interest earnings drop substantially, too. So that's a big piece of our revenue sources. The third issue, again, is Senate Bill 304, moving the Appraisal Certification and Licensure Board out of the agency and establishing it as a semi-independent agency under ORS 182. And the fourth issue that we'll be talking about is the Office of Minority Women and Emerging Small Business. This program, relatively small, certifies those businesses under both federal and state programs. It has been funded partly by an assessment on state agencies, but largely by the State Highway Fund. As I'm sure you're aware, the Department of Justice looked at the Highway Fund and raised questions about all the programs being funded to ensure that they meet the constitutional test for being funded from the Highway Fund. We've been working with the Department of Transportation to have determined that we could probably fund anywhere from 41% to 76% of that program from the Highway Fund. We're being conservative. We've chosen for this budget 41%, and we are working with local governments who use these services to try to get some funds from them. But we will continue through the session and into the interim to work with the local governments and with the Department of Transportation to fund that program. We're also looking at cutting back expenditures if that's necessary. Those are the issues. On the bottom of page 23, we've listed both our option packages and our reduction packages. As I mentioned earlier, all our divisions are supported by dedicated funds, we can address some of the workload needs that those divisions that continue to have healthy revenues require. You'll see that five of the option packages that we're bringing are being reduced or eliminated because of the revenue issues that we have. And we're also looking at cuts into the base budget at the bottom of the page to address those revenue issues as well. And each of those divisions, as it comes up, we'll discuss those in more detail. Madam Chair and members of the committee, that's the overview that we have. I'd be happy to answer questions or take direction for more bring more information back tomorrow.
Questions? On page 22, the bottom bullet in the second group of bullets, reduce funding to the insurance division for dispute resolution services between employers and workers' comp. Will you be touching on the reasoning for that later or what it means?
Madam Chair, yes, we will. Just very briefly, we have huge alternative dispute resolution efforts in the department, and we're pulling together a summary of those because you had indicated earlier that we'd be asking about those.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we will talk about that and what the impact is and where those disputes will then be resolved.
I'll hold that till later then. And then under the Office of Minority Women and Emerging Small Businesses on the next page, are you going to explain later how ODOT, even though the Justice Department says that's okay for ODOT's expenditure, how that connects?
Madam Chair, yes, we are, and because there's always a lot of interest in how the various programs work together, and at Representative Butler's request, we're going to be bringing to you a chart or a schematic on how ODOT and our program and the commissions and a variety of other programs in state government work together and what the connections are.
And I guess also, Debbie, it says that the department recommends reducing the interagency transfer by $340,747. What was the, do you have what the original amount was, or could you share that with me?
We do. And it will be here in just a moment.
And yes, Representative Butler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On page 22, under the workman's compensation, the last paragraph there before the four bullets, we're talking about the shortfall on the economic factors plus the number of years of the reduction in premiums. An increase in workers' compensation assessment rate from 7.3 to 9.1 would be required to eliminate the shortfall. And then it talks about how you're working with your stakeholders and those kinds of things. Are we, in fact, that's a 1.8% increase that would be necessary if you chose to do that, to take it from 7.3 to 9.1. And a 1.8% increase on 7.3% is a 25% increase in the workers' compensation assessment rate. Is that the effect of what's happening currently, or has this just happened in the last 2 years? How long has this been going on that we have been behind the eight ball to the tune of 25%?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, what happens with the premium assessment, we look at this on a year-by-year basis and set it every year. The major factor that has an effect on that is the size of the pure premium, which is the base on which you assess the assessment. And as it drops, the base becomes smaller and the cost that the amount of money that we then need to raise to support legislatively approved programs requires a larger and larger assessment. We have had 11 straight years of drop in that premium, and it we continue to expect the actuaries and the National Association that we work with and the economists and all the folks who are certified smart on this thing. It continue to expect that to level off and the pure premium even to start going up, and it has not done that, and it's not that trend is something that we haven't expected, but that has continued to drop to have an effect on this assessment. The other thing that has an effect is our success in lowering the number of claims in the system, because as claims drop, an employer's workers' comp obligation drops, and that employer can pay less premium. So again, the premium base drops. So as these factors all come together, our assessment has kind of bounces up and down. We were able to keep that assessment at 4.5% for about 8 or 9 years straight. And again, there's a chart for the back in your book that shows that, partly because we had built up a large ending balance over the years. And as we spent down the ending balance, which had been subsidizing that rate, the rate had to start moving up. So now we're beginning to look at, we went from 4.5% to 7.3%, and now we're looking at, again, at another hole coming up. So this is a whole slew of factors that come together and have an impact on the size of the assessment, and it's something that we watch very closely over the years. You're right that it's I think it's time to start looking at program reductions, because of course that's the other piece of the equation. If you continue to spend, given cost of living increases and salary increases and that kind of thing, you're going to get out of whack. So taking a three-pronged approach, of which includes program cuts as well as a slight increase, I think is probably the best way to manage this.
Here, the answer to the question is, and this has been coming over a period of years and comes from a different, a whole group of different factors, but during this 11-year period, you've already moved from 4.5 to 7.3, which is a 62% increase in rate,
mm-hmm.
And now we've moved from the 7.3, or we would consider that as a possibility, that if this was in lieu of reductions and other efficiencies that we could take, that would require an additional 25% on top of the already existing rate, which would in effect be a doubling, more than a doubling of the rate of the 4.5% rate, a 100% increase over this 11 years. Is that over the 11 years? You said we'll find that in the information, the historical. Historical increases in that assessment.
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, yes, there are other things that go into this whole system, including the fact that the pure premium has dropped has saved businesses well over $5 billion over that period of time. So when you take the whole system into account, the impact on business and the impact on the program tends to balance each other off. But yes, you will see in the historical information what that assessment has done over the years, what the cent per hour assessment has done over the years, what the pure premium has done over the years, and we can bring all that together into an overall picture. Yes, and we're going to be going into that in detail tomorrow.
Okay, Representative Hayden?
Well, to continue that line of thinking, and actually to go back to my original question where we were transferring revenues from the workers' compensation operating account to cover administrative costs of operating the program, I'll be watching with some interest to see if what is driving the premium increases. You say it's a number of things, but my hope that it is not that the agent, that the needs of the agency are driving and the personnel are driving the increases rather than the needs of the workers. To increase premiums to cover disabled workers is one thing. To increase premiums to pay salaries for agency workers is another thing. As you said, I think if that's the case, that you do indeed, you might indeed want to look at program reductions.
Thank you. Yes, Mary.
Can I make a comment about that, Madam Chair and Representative Hayden? The last two legislative sessions, we have come forward with legislation to reduce or eliminate some of our programming. So I think there, and when in day two, when we talk about this overall revenue and funding issue with workers' comp, you'll see that we have used a multi-approach to the revenue shortfall for the last two sessions, and we have actually eliminated a number of positions both last session, and we'll be proposing to do that again. Thank you.
seem a little unique in that. Congratulations. We're going to take a 5-minute break now. Thanks, Debbie.